Hello, everybody. Welcome back to That's Life Podcast. My name is Abby Murphy, and I am here solo today. If you're a frequent listener, you know that it is usually me and my fiance, ding, 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 Ryan Luckett. I will soon be Abby Luckett, but not yet, sadly. We're patiently waiting. But today, it's just me. Transparently, it was because Ryan had something else to do, but turns out he doesn't have that thing to do anymore. But we got really excited about this episode being a solo episode because today I'm going to be answering your questions all about body image, eating disorders, and everything that I've been through. Physically, mentally, emotionally, and then also some fitness tips, some things that I've learned in the fitness realm, running, training, all of the above, basically anything that has to do with running, training, struggling with body image, struggling with eating, you name it, anything in that realm, I'm here to share my experience on it. And I just want to go ahead and put a trigger warning out there for anyone. I'm going to be digging into all of this pretty much. I don't want to get censored because I want to be able to talk about these heavy topics without things, you know, being taken down. So I may be using words that are a little softer approach. So ED, for example, or I don't know, intimacy. I'll be talking about intimacy in marriage, if you know what that means. So if this is a podcast that you normally listen to in the car with your kids, you may want to turn this off for them, depending on what you want to expose them to. There's not going to be anything like sexual or anything like that, but definitely some deep and heavy topics in this podcast because I want to really put it all out there for you all and share what I know, what I've learned. I'm not claiming to know everything. I'm not claiming to have the right answers for everything. I'm not school, like I haven't learned anything in school about this. I do have a health sciences major. I have an interdisciplinary studies major. So one of the areas of study was health sciences. I'm also getting my certified personal training license, and I'm also going to get certified in nutrition plan, like making nutrition plans. So I do have some knowledge in that as I'm going through those processes. But again, like I'm not a doctor. I am a full believer that everyone's bodies are different. Everyone's bodies react differently to different exercises, different foods, different diseases, different mental struggles. But I am here to share my experience and hopefully talk through some of this with you all. I fully feel so blessed to be able to have a platform to come on and talk about this. And that's really just because of you all, like, honestly. And it almost makes me feel prideful saying that of like, I have a platform, but I'm grateful. I am so grateful because literally without people listening, engaging, commenting, asking the questions, I wouldn't be able to do this. And I feel so called to do this and have turned down a lot of opportunities because this and the people are what I want to pour my energy into, the listeners, the people that are here. I want to be able to just talk with you. It's hard on a podcast where it's just me and a microphone to be like, yeah, I'm talking with you. But I pray that you just feel me not talking at you, but talking with you in this podcast, especially. I'm a little scatterbrained today, but I think that's kind of good energy to bring into this because this podcast is not polished and this episode sure is not going to be polished. So for those of you that don't know, a little background about me before we get into these questions, usually we start with something a little more lighthearted, but I kind of just want to get right into it because I feel like this is going to be a very, very long episode. I tried to gather some categories of questions that people submitted that were like pretty similar or in the most similar like area of focus. I'm probably gonna have to do a part two to this because there were so many questions, y'all. There were so many questions and I'm so grateful again. But my prayer before this was just like, Lord, use me. And I don't know what to say, but I know you will and you do, Lord. So please just speak through me. And yeah, so the Lord's going to be really prevalent in this episode because he is good and he has good plans. And who knows what this podcast is going to be like, but I'm here to share my experiences because the Lord was there through it all and guiding me and was there when I yelled at him and when I told him that I didn't like him, and was also there when I was glorifying him and praising him. And yeah. So a little background about me and my experience just with everything. Maybe you just randomly clicked on this podcast and you literally have no idea who I am. Hi, I'm Abby Murphy. I'm 22 years old. I had anorexia eating disorder when I was 11 in fifth grade, and that lasted 2 years until I was in seventh grade. If you want to listen back to my eating disorder story, I basically just go through, it's kind of like partly part of my testimony as being a believer and also recovery, the beautiful miracle that the Lord orchestrated in my life. Of long story short, I had an eating disorder for 2 years, got a concussion, and woke up and it was like I had never struggled a day in my life. So that was that period, and it was anorexia. And then I relapsed again during COVID when I was a junior in high school, and it came in the form of orthorexia, which is obsession with healthy eating, obsession with working out, overtraining, causes a lot of like inflammation in the body. I lost my period, lots of things, and then recovered from that my senior year of high school. Then I went to college. This was in 2021, fall of 2021. I had both. So I relapsed. I felt very out of control in college, and I had anorexia and orthorexia all combined into one, lost a lot of weight drastically, but it was the only way that I felt like I had control. And so I went home for Christmas break and I told my mom, like, I haven't had my period in years. I am tired. This is not the life I want to live. I'm depressed. I'm waking up every day and I'm sad. I need change. So I got into therapy. I started seeing a dietitian. Everything went great. I got my period back. So I got really excited and I started training for a marathon. Well, then that was a little too much too soon. And I realized I got in over my head. And so a week before that marathon, it was the Rock and Roll Marathon, and it was in April of 2022, I dropped out a week before the marathon. So that was tough, but it's okay. Gave my bib to someone else. I don't even know if that's allowed or not, but at the time I wasn't in the running space like I am now. I've always ran. I've ran since I was 13, but it's always been a me thing, and I've never ran for a team just because I love running so much that I love to keep it mine. It's a safe space for me, and it's something that I love to do in solitude. It gives me time to think, and I never want it to become a competition or become work. It is a joy. It's always been a joy, and I want to push myself to have goals in that joy space and not think of it as performance. And so kind of gave myself some time going back to the marathon to just recover from that. And then around September of last year, it would be 2023, I decided I was healthy enough and ready to train for a marathon again. I was pretty sad in school, didn't want to be doing theater. And I was like, I need something that's going to bring me joy and make me excited about the days. Let's train for a marathon. So I did it, and it was awesome. It was so fun. I felt so connected to the Lord. It was the most spiritual run I've ever had in my life. I was praying the whole time, like a prayer where I didn't even feel like I was forcing myself to pray. I just prayed. I was just talking to the Lord the whole time, and I have another podcast episode about all that to hear if you want to hear more of the spiritual side of things. I got that in 3:31:50, I think, or something, 3 hours, 31 minutes, 50 seconds. And then I came back again in April of 2024, and I BQ'd on my second marathon. I got 3:20:21, I think. I can't remember. Don't quote me on that. 3:20 something. And then I ran an ultra marathon in September, this past September, 2024. And I ran 106 miles. It was super awesome, super fun. I love ultra running. The ultra space is definitely my favorite. I ran 106 miles, well, 106.64 if you want to get technical, in 24 hours. And I felt very accomplished with that. And now I am currently training for the Austin Marathon. I want to PR for Boston, but I'm just running the Austin Marathon just for fun. My PR focus is going to be for Boston Marathon, but for Austin, I'm just going to try to get through the hills because I feel like those hills are going to be brutal, I've heard. So that's a little bit about me, my fitness journey. I started working out when I was 13, right when I was in recovery from my first eating disorder, and kind of just fell in love with it and fell in love with the idea that I could work out because I love my body and not because I don't love my body. Anyways, with that, let's jump into some of these questions. I wrote them down. I'm super excited to talk about them. And yeah, so the first one, how did you silence the ED voice? So it's funny. If you're not in this world, it's hard to understand like what even an ED is. A lot of people that have been in this world name their voice that they hear, the name is ED, because it's ED, eating disorder. And that just kind of helps personify the voice that is not yours. So whether you've dealt with this or not, for those that don't really understand the struggle of the eating disorder, it is not you. And if you are someone who is in an eating disorder or doesn't even know that you're in an eating disorder, but something's off, give yourself the permission to know the truth that you are not your eating disorder and those thoughts are not from you. Those thoughts are from the devil. I fully mean that with every fiber of my being, that those voices that you hear in your head that tell you you're not enough, you shouldn't eat, you're ugly, you're fat, you're skinny, you're this, that, and the other, whatever form your eating disorder voice comes in, you should overeat tonight, you should eat your feelings, you should starve yourself. Name what you want to name of that voice that it tells you. You don't deserve this food. You need to go throw up this food. XYZ. That is not you. That is not from the Lord. That is from pure evil. And the Bible tells us that all around us, there's a fight going on. There is an army that we cannot see that is between the devil and the Lord. And the devil is going to try to take hold of that space in your brain that is, what's the word I want to use? That is, has discomfort, that is questioning things, but ultimately that doesn't have control. And I think that's where those thoughts creep in the most, is when we lose control, because ultimately an eating disorder stems from not having control. At least that's what I've heard with talking with every single person that has also dealt with something like this. And years of therapy. I've been in therapy since I was 13. I'm still in therapy now. I love therapy. I'm very pro therapy, but the thing that I've taken away consistently from every therapist that I've had is that the eating disorder stems from not having control, because you can control your food. You can control the size. You can control how much you work out until you can't anymore. And that's when it becomes the problem. That's when it consumes you. And that's when it's an idol in your life. And so I think the first step in silencing the eating disorder voice is navigating the eating disorder voice and realizing that you have it. I think the first step in any recovery whatsoever is admitting to yourself that you have an eating disorder or you have a problem. That was so hard for me, because I was just in such denial, and I was so young at the time, I didn't even know what it was. And back when I was struggling with it, social media wasn't as big of a thing. I didn't have a phone. I was 11. Like, I didn't know what it was. I didn't have someone to relate with. I thought I was the only person that had ever gone through this. I didn't know this was like a thing. I didn't know other people had this. And now, thank the Lord for social media and many ways, because it's creating awareness about this. It's letting people know that they're not alone. It's letting people know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel and that you can come together in your struggle. I think the hard part is that sometimes we glamorize recovery in social media and we glamorize what it looks like to recover. And there's a fine line between encouraging others and then almost like keeping track or keeping score. And I feel like as the viewer, there's a fine line between being encouraged and comparing and comparison. I think at the root of it, we have to be so real with ourselves. We have to be so real with ourselves. Even if you don't say it out loud, even if you don't admit it to anyone else, you have to admit it to yourself, because if you don't want to change for yourself, you're not going to have change at all. I fell into a trap a lot in up and down versions of recovery that I'm kind of realizing now in my adult life, that a lot of times I was wanting to get better for my parents and for my therapist and not for myself. And now it's coming back to bite me in the butt, honestly, because I now in today's world am having thoughts still of, you're not eating enough because your mom isn't telling you good job after finishing your meal. Like, I mean, silly things like that, as to where I'm stuffing myself, which is gluttony, over consuming food when I am sick to my stomach, because I feel like I need to please other people by showing them that I'm eating. And it stems from me wanting to recover from other people, for other people. Now, there are many, many, many cases where you're going to have to force yourself whether you want to or not. This is not me telling you, hey, you need to start looking into recovery because you want to. No one wants to recover. Well, okay, I take that back. Erase, control, alt, delete. We want to recover, but no one wants to get into the discomfort of what recovery is. So yeah, I agree with that statement that I just said. And so sometimes you do have to rely on other people in that. But I'm such a performance-focused person that I fell into the trap of only doing it for other people and not for myself. And now I'm finally in a place where I do want to do it for myself, and that's great. But I kind of went off on a tangent in that. But yeah, you have to navigate the ED voice first. So if you have to personify that voice and say, okay, you're going to be a person because this is not me, you have to separate those two. You have to. Because if you think of yourself as the villain, that's only going to make things worse. And it's just not true. It's not true. To silence that voice, what worked for me specifically, and I think it's different for everybody, but something that worked for me specifically was different throughout the ages that I was. So when I was in fifth grade, sixth grade, I would write it down. I would have voice A and voice B. Voice A would be me, voice B would be Ed. And then I have so many papers, y'all, so many journals of conversations in my head, just silly things. And it feels so silly. It feels so silly, and it helps. I go back and read it and I get chills sometimes when I read it, because I'm like, 11-year-old Abby was telling herself these things? What? For example, I'm trying to think of something. This is just a general thing that I would tell myself. Voice A, which is me, A for Abby, because I was structured like that. Voice A, I shouldn't eat this slice of cake. Voice A, I want to eat this slice of cake. Voice B, you shouldn't eat that slice of cake. Voice A, but it's going to taste really good and it's really sweet and I like sugar. Voice B, if you have that slice of cake, it's going to make you fat. Pause here. I also want to put a disclaimer that at the time, the word fat was negative for me. Me here, Abby, who she is now, the word fat is not a negative or a positive. It is just a look of a human being. And for me, I want to say boldly that I do not see that as a negative thing. I do not. I think I see negatives and positives in the words healthy and unhealthy. And I think that can go on both ends of the spectrum, body mass wise. But the word fat and the word skinny is a descriptor, and I have trained my brain to eliminate, and I'm still continuing to train my brain to eliminate feelings associated with those words, because they hold no worth in defining who I am as a person. Anyways, this is fifth grade Abby. I hope that message comes across, because I never want to associate negative terms with skinny, fat, tall, short, black, white, whatever. I think everyone is beautiful in their own way. And that's what I'm going to leave it as. Going back. So voice B has just said, but you're going to get fat. Voice A. Deep down, I know that I won't. Voice B. But if you let yourself have one slice, you're going to eat five slices. And it would just like go on and on and on in this fight, in this battle, as to where before, if I didn't take that out and see it on paper, I would have merged it together and just been like, well, I can't eat that because I'm going to get fat, and just believed that it was me telling myself that. So that was something that helped me then. I remember my junior year, it was a little bit different because it came in the form of exercise, and I really, really struggled with silencing the "you're not doing enough" voice. I just finished, I don't know, 10 miles. Well, that wasn't enough. That wasn't enough because you need to do 12. That wasn't enough because you need to do 13. That wasn't enough because you need to do sprints. And I would speak out loud to the devil because I knew at that point, my first go round of an eating disorder, I had told myself, hey, this voice is not me, as to where then when I relapsed in that second one, it came in a different form, but I still had tools from the first time to use to know, hey, I can get through this. I am aware that this is not me. Let me speak this out loud. And I would literally just scream at the devil. And I'd be like, you don't have a hold over me. Even if I didn't deep down believe it yet, I knew that the Lord was on my side and that was all the power that I needed. And so I would, you don't have this hold over me. I am enough. I am not defined by my workouts. I'm not defined by my running. I'm not defined by what I eat. Did I have ups and downs? Yes. Would I say that that would work for me now? Yeah. Are there different tools that I would use in the me now voice? 100%. If I were to tell myself then how to silence that voice, honestly, something that I've learned from Ryan is that it's not that deep. And I don't mean that to sound insensitive, but I actually mean that to sound overly sensitive. And the fact that we have so many tools and so many things now today with technology and advice and our friends and therapy, and it's easy to go to everyone and try to get all the advice in the world. Literally me here trying to give advice. But when it sums down to it, something that has helped me so much is literally being like, I am one human being in a little house, in a state, in a country, inside of a continent, in the middle of the ocean, on a planet, in the solar system. And I just kind of zoom out and I'm like, oh my goodness, the Lord is greater than all of this. I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. Because this voice is smaller than me. This voice is tiny. This voice is weak. This voice doesn't have a say over who I am, because there is so much more out there. There is so much life out there, and I'm going to live it. It's not that deep. Shutting my brain off, I'm not thinking about it right now. I'm not going to let Satan have that power over me. And just positively zooming out and speaking that over yourself, taking those thoughts captive, not letting them fall into your heart, right? Letting them go in and out, not even fearing them, but just letting them pass through until suddenly they don't pass through anymore. That's my encouragement. It's hard, and it's a practice. It takes prayer and petition and practice and tools and knowing how it works for you. But that's my encouragement. The next question is understanding the line between the eating disorder and discipline. This is something I constantly am connected to. I wouldn't say I constantly struggle with it necessarily, but I'm definitely connected to it because I sit in the shame of letting my workouts dictate my mood for the day. Guilty, guilty, guilty. And I've come a long way with it, but I definitely have had a recent past with it. And it's because I'm letting that define my worth. I've done it through my whole life. I grew up a theater kid. I grew up in you know, having people watch me perform. And I would only let myself feel proud of myself if I heard praise from other people. In school, it was the same way. I would always show my mom my report card. I wouldn't even let myself, you know, enjoy that hard work that I had put in. And on the other end of the spectrum, if I messed up, I would let that fall into who I was as a person. If I fell and scraped my knee as a child, well, then I was a mistake and I'm clumsy and I'm like, not it was a mistake that I fell, but I was the mistake. This is a deep rooted thing for me and it's something to navigate. But the things that I put in place, honestly, the navigating factor for me is Jesus. The more connected I am in the word, the more connected I am through prayer and through listening to how the Lord speaks to me, the more easily I'm able to navigate the difference between, honestly, right and wrong. Because if I'm overdoing it, I'm idolizing that. And idolizing anything above the Lord is a sin. However, the Lord has called us to work hard and to have goals and to be disciplined. And it's this tough thing where with other addictions, you can eliminate them completely and it's a good thing. But it's not like that with food and exercise. Unless I am like physically unable or not capable or have something where like, I don't know, I need to get my period back. I'm severely underweight. I have a something. Unless that's the case, I'm not saying this is for everything, but unless that's the case, it's not in my best interest as wanting to be a healthy, operating, functioning human being to eliminate exercise completely. And for me and myself, I can't eliminate food completely. I'm gonna die. Like, so it's hard. You have to navigate it. As to where if I cut out alcohol, drugs, pornography, you know, name your addiction, if you cut that out completely, I mean, that's what you should do, is just cut those out completely. If you're addicted to them, cut them out. And it's hard. And it's possible. And I urge you to pray. I urge you to practice how the Lord speaks to you. I heard somewhere that, you know, we always go to God when we want to hear his voice with these big questions. What do I do with my life? What's my calling? Blah, blah, blah. But how do you know how to listen and what to listen for and how he speaks to you if you don't practice the little things first? And they compared it to a relationship with someone here on earth. If I only go, like if I'm meeting someone new for the first time, the first question I'm going to ask them is not, hey, what's the meaning of life? Hey, what are your philosophical thoughts on this? No, I'm going to be like, oh, tell me a little bit about yourself. Like, what do you like to do for fun? What's your favorite color? What's your favorite food? Asking these little silly questions. And so I had a phase in my life where I literally was like, Lord, do you want me to pick this red flower or this green flower? Should I eat chicken or should I eat turkey? Should I go on a walk or read a book? What do you think I should sing at my next seminar? Like, those silly little questions and listening to see how he speaks and learning what that is. And for me, it's through my gut. And until he changes and wants to tell me how he speaks to me another way, it's through my gut. And my gut really does navigate me in that, because we are given the Holy Spirit that lives inside of us. He's there with you. You just got to tap into it. Okay, next question. How did you know that your eating disorder started? This kind of ties back a little bit to the beginning, but I was in denial for so long. I think with my other two eating disorders, I knew pretty quickly because I had gone through the first one and also realized that I could take control of it pretty quickly. Since I relapsed twice, I wasn't as scared of it anymore and kind of knew I had built up tools over time to eliminate it very quickly, as to where the first time I had no idea what I was doing. It lasted for 2 years, literally 2 years, which, you know, for other people, it's a lot longer. For some people, it's a lot shorter, and they're all valid and they're all real. And I think I came to terms with knowing that my eating disorder started when I was in the mountains and my uncle made me a smoothie. It was about 3 months in, and he put ice cream in it but didn't tell me. So I took a couple sips, and then I asked how he made it, and he said he put a couple scoops of ice cream in it, and I had a panic attack and threw a tantrum. And after that, I had calmed down and I was like, oh wow, this is a lot bigger than me. This is a lot bigger than I thought it was. I'm not trying to eat healthy anymore. This is a problem. And then I got even deeper into, but I'm right. And this is right. And this is my life. And this is all I know. And this is the only way I know how to think. And then tying back to navigating that voice and taking the steps in recovery. But yeah, I think it was an action for sure. I didn't just wake up one day and was like, ta-da. And I didn't really have anything hard that kind of like sent me into it either. I just wanted to start eating healthy. I was young. I was in fifth grade. I was 11. And I just remember learning what a serving size was and counting out my Swedish fish because I wanted to eat the serving size, and then realizing what calories were. And then I liked feeling empowered and setting goals. So then I started making my own meals, and then I, you know, knew how many calories I had in a day. And that was cool because I was in control. I was so young. I didn't have control over anything. I couldn't drive myself. I couldn't go anywhere. And so that's what I had control over. I felt like an adult. And then I started becoming scared of crackers, bread, peanut butter, sweets, ice cream, all these things. And it's hard to come to terms with it. But when you do, and when you realize that's the first step in the right direction, kind of like tapping into that a little bit, a couple people asked, how do you get out of wanting to be the sick one? This is something that honestly, and this is being really vulnerable, but still comes back to me today. Still. It's a thought that has lost a lot of value, but not all value, if I'm being honest. Because there is something toxically empowering about being the best at something. And in the eating disorder world, for a lot of people, not every eating disorder, again, there are lots of them, but for anorexia specifically, which I dealt with, being skinniest is the best. And it's really hard to break that thought pattern of, well, if I can't be the best at anything, I'll be the best at being skinny. Or I'll be the best at eating less than everybody else. Or I'll be the best at working out more than everybody else. There were a lot of times, even when working out, where I had to do more than everybody else, or else it didn't count. Like, oh, if my mom went to the gym today and we also went on a walk together, then if I go to the gym, I'm still doing the same as her, so I need to add something else so that I can be better. I mean, still thoughts that come up today. And then I have to be like, no, get away, like a fly swatter. Like, what is this? But there were a lot of times where I believed that, especially in my second eating disorder. But in my first eating disorder, honestly, y'all, it's never enough. And I know we hear that a lot. But the thing is, and I mean this in the most encouraging way possible, you are never going to be the skinniest one. Even if you are. Let's just say logistically, I'm the outsider and I look at, there's person A, B, and C. Person C is struggling with this idea of wanting to be the skinniest person. And I look at person C and I'm like, oh my gosh, they are so skinny. And I could even say, oh my goodness, they're skinnier than the other two, which people don't think like that. That's another thought pattern we need to break. No one is comparing, no other person in the room is comparing your body to anybody else's. They're just comparing theirs to others. Nobody's paying attention to other people because they're only worried about themselves. But let's just say in a fairy tale land, I'm looking at these three people and I'm like, oh my goodness, person C is so much skinnier than person A and B. Person C, who has this mindset, who has this struggle and these thoughts, is not going to feel that. They're not. I have never, ever walked into a room in every phase of where my body has been, at my smallest, at my sickest, at my healthiest. I have never walked into a room and thought I was the skinniest person there. Ever. Ever. And I can confidently say that. And then I look back at pictures and I'm like, what? I was tiny. I look back at pictures from fifth grade and I'm like, I was so small. But I remember so vividly those times in my life thinking I was the largest person in the room. So honestly, how to get out of wanting to be the skinniest person and the sick one is knowing that it is never going to be. You are never going to get that feeling. You are never going to be the sickest one. You are never going to be the skinniest one because it's never going to be enough. The only way it would be quote unquote enough is if you're so small that you're gone from this earth. Truly, truly. Because if you think about the eating disorder, that's slowly what you're doing. You are slowly unaliving yourself. And it's so real and it's so mental. It's not physical. It's not. And people who haven't struggled with the eating disorder probably won't understand that concept. So I'll try to explain it the best that I can, but it's a mental illness. It is something that takes over. It's not something you can say, just eat too. It's not something you can say, just stop eating so much at night. It's not something that you can say, well, just stop throwing up. It's mental. It's not these actions. These actions are supporting the mental illness, but the starting point and the cornerstone of it is the mentality behind it. I would encourage you practically to get into therapy. I would encourage you practically to assess what activities you're doing. I struggled so much. I'm also a dancer, and I struggled so much with always looking at myself in the mirror and my body in this tiny little leotard in the mirror, and then comparing what I was wearing to the other girls who were wearing the exact same thing as me, and struggling when my boobs started to grow, and struggling now I'm noticing cellulite on my body, and it's hard. But honestly, running has helped me so much because I'm not looking in a mirror. And sometimes it's not necessarily working through the thought patterns of it, but just totally removing yourself from the space in general. And that's really hard. That's really, really hard. But there have been times in my life where I'm like, you can't look in the mirror right now because you know, you've already set yourself the expectation of what you're going to tell yourself. You can't step on the scale right now. You're not allowed to look on the scale because you know what you're going to tell yourself. There have been days where I have to focus on committing to myself over actually doing things and saying, like, you committed to eating 3 meals a day. You need to do it. There are some times where I'll be sad and I'll literally have that thought creep in of like, well, you don't deserve food. And when that happens, I call a friend. And I ask them to go get a meal with me because if I can't eat alone, I know I can eat with someone else because I don't want to share those toxic thoughts. And so if I'm with someone else, it forces me to get through that, to get outside of myself and to eat in front of that person. Taking the uncomfortable steps to get yourself out of your comfort zone is the best way to stop thinking of that because it gets you outside of yourself and it makes you realize that being the sickest and being the skinniest is not the everything. Like, I am not defined by my size. But I really truly feel for all of my people that have grown up in that spotlight of literally I was in a spotlight, like doing theater, of just being like watched by other people, or growing up in front of a mirror constantly staring at yourself, because it is so real and everyone feels it and it's really hard. But I encourage you to take those steps and get uncomfy. Do you feel like you have to run to earn food? Not anymore, but I did. When I was younger, I did. And you don't. And you shouldn't. Our body at rest, I think it's different for everybody, but here's the science behind it. We all have maintenance calories, okay? That is the amount of calories that our body needs to stay at the weight that it is at without doing any activity whatsoever. So let's just say my maintenance, I know briefly what my maintenance calories are. I don't want to say it out because I don't want to cause comparison. So I'm going to say a number that is not my maintenance calories. Let's say my maintenance calories are 1800 calories. Okay. Awesome. That means me sitting on the couch doing absolutely nothing needs 1800 calories to remain at that body weight without gaining or without losing every single day consistently. Okay. So now if you add an exercise, let's say I go for a walk, 2 mile walk, and I burn 150 calories. Okay. Well, now if I want to maintain my body weight, I need 1950 calories. Is this making sense? Yes. Yes. Say I want to lose weight. So my maintenance calories are 1800. Let's say I eat 1700 for a couple months and I lose a couple pounds in 2 months. Okay. Now my metabolism is going to slow down after a period of time. So then my maintenance calories are now going to be 1700 because my metabolism has slowed down to reach the amount of calories that I'm feeding myself. So if I want to lose more weight, I have to eat a less amount of calories. Okay. Now this can be done in a healthy way if you want to lose weight in a healthy way. But the problem is it takes a hold of you because we jump the gun and we go too fast, too soon. And that name any fad diet, and I can say pretty confidently, you're going to go right back to where you started because it just jumps the gun way too soon. And I have had lots of cycles with that, especially with feeling like I have to run to earn food, right? And yeah, it's hard because then it causes binging and it causes extreme weight loss to where then your body doesn't know what it's doing. And I even got to the point where my body needed calories and I was not giving it what it needed, that it started eating away at my muscle. And so even though I was really, really small and skinny, I was not muscular because my body needed so much, it started basically eating itself pretty much, which is extremely, extremely hardful. But that's why I was always cold. I was losing hair. Like I was losing the quote unquote not necessary things because my body went into survival mode. And your body can do that for a while. I mean, the Lord created us to be fasting human beings. Now, don't mishear what I'm saying, fasting in a sense of doing it in the healthy, godly way, not in the way of idolizing food or exercise and doing it in an unhealthy way where your body doesn't need it. Those are two completely different things. But our bodies were created to survive through extreme conditions like that, but they are not supposed to stay there at all. They are not supposed to stay there. So with all that, say I wanted to gain weight, it would go in the opposite direction. My maintenance calories are 1800. Say I'm trying to put on some weight, then I'll eat 200 extra calories. So that's 2000 calories a day and not move. For me, when I was trying to gain weight during my ultra marathon, I was running so much, I had to eat a lot, like 4,000 to 5,000 calories a day kind of stuff. And it worked. I gained weight during ultra marathon prep when I was running 85, 90 miles a week, 95 miles a week. Crazy, but it happened. Now, a lot of times in marathon preps, I will gain weight whether I'm tracking or not, because your body is under so much stress. And then you also just gain muscle. But again, these are all very, very, very nitpicky things. That is a little science lesson for you guys. Your metabolism will slow down the less you feed yourself, basically. When I go in those phases, or when I had gone in those phases of feeling like I had to run to earn food, it was as a punishment. And now I'm at a place in life where running is a joy. And I know that I have to eat in order to run. I don't have to run in order to eat. Let me say that again. You have to eat in order to run. You don't have to run in order to eat. You should not run in order to eat. You are going to do worse for your body by running to earn food than eating to earn to run. I would just honestly encourage this person, if you are struggling with this, to speak over yourself. Eat to earn the run. Eat to earn the run, not run to earn the food. That's my encouragement, because guilt is not from the Lord. So waking up the next morning after eating more than you would have liked to, or even feeling like you binged, does not mean that you should go run until you've burned what you think you ate last night. Absolutely not. Honestly, it probably means you need to rest. Your body is so stressed out. It needs to rest. And you may be thinking, Abby, I can't give myself that rest. I don't know what I would do. I would just eat even more. I would just sit and eat even more. And I can't, because I already ate too much last night. And but I've been there. I have been there. And friend, I'm telling you, the rest has helped me reset so much. A couple weeks ago, I took a whole week off because I was just spiraling. And I was eating junk, not getting enough sleep. And I kept waking up and being like, oh my goodness, like I need to run because I did so bad yesterday and I need to start over today and get back on it and get back on it. And then every night it would end with me feeling, ugh, oh my gosh, this is horrible. Oh my goodness. Okay. I'm going to wake up tomorrow and I'm going to start fresh and I'm going to get the run in. And it was a cycle until finally I was like, I am so burned out. I need to rest. Okay. I'm going to take a full rest day tomorrow, even though I didn't plan it. Oh, this is really good for me. I'm going to do the same thing again tomorrow, until it lasted 8 days. And I've been great ever since. Give your body the rest. You deserve the rest. You deserve the rest. You don't have to work for it. Rest is God honoring. Rest is a command from the Lord. Tips to getting over eating more while training. Do it. Whether you want to or not, do it. If you have goals, here's the thing. There's a difference between staying fit and training. If you want to stay fit, there's, you know, a lighter emphasis on fueling yourself, but training means you have a goal, you have a race, you have a thing, you have something that you are training for. Fuel is the number one source of getting better, getting faster, getting stronger. And that's something I've had to tell myself, is smaller does not equal faster, smaller equals worse. I take that back again. I'm speaking a little bit fast for what I want to say. Smaller does not equal faster. Smaller equals size. I'll say that. Not worse or better. Not either one of those. But I will say that I have performed better at a higher weight, at more weight than I have when I'm smaller. So I guess that's why I said that in the beginning, just because that was my personal experience, but it's not the same experience for everybody. I think also with my history and with my past, that's something that's kind of been like edged into my brain a little bit, that I kind of need to re-navigate those thought patterns a bit, just from what people have told me. And that's just not necessarily always the case. So if I offended anybody who's saying that, I'm sorry, that was not my goal. And I take that back. Honestly, I didn't mean it. My lips spoke larger than my words or my thoughts. But anyways, reel it in, Abby. Come back to the question. My biggest number one tip would be to ask yourself how much this goal actually means to you, And if you want to accomplish this goal and you know you need to eat more, this person is asking, how do you get overeating more while training? If you want to accomplish this goal, you've got to take the steps, because you're doing yourself a disservice if you're not. My training has increased so much the more I eat. And if I'm being quite honest, I don't really notice a change in my body. My encouragement for you, another tip, would be to give yourself a timeline. Like, something I did is I gave myself 2 weeks and I was like, okay, for these 2 weeks, I'm just going to eat whatever, whenever, not try to hold myself back. And I ate and I did that. And after those 2 weeks, I felt incredible, the best I'd ever felt. So then I was like, okay, I'll do it for another week. I think sometimes we set these like super big goals for ourselves of like, I need to do this forever and I'm starting now. Something that helps me is just breaking it up. I break it up week by week. That's why when I started eating whole foods, like only whole foods for the first time, I started with just a week. Now I'm on like 2 months, 3 months, but I still am just going in week by week by week by week until it just becomes a lifestyle. And staying in check with yourself. Maybe you need to write it out. Sometimes I'll have weeks, and again, I just break it up into weeks. It's not like I start saying I'm going to do this for the whole month or do 75 hard or whatever. But like, sometimes I'll have weeks where I'll plan out my meals. Sometimes I don't. But if I really need that structure and I'm craving that and I need to get over that hurdle of eating more, I'll plan out those meals. And I'll just say, okay, this week I'm going to stick to this. And then when Sunday comes and I need to reset for the week, I'll reevaluate. And maybe this doesn't work for me. But for this week, for these 6-7 days, I'm going to commit to this whether I like it or not and see how I feel. I would set those practical steps in place for yourself. How do you not go back to the old ED? It's hard because it's tempting. I like the feeling of recovering after I've been not in a good place, because that recovery high is so nice. It honestly is tempting to want to go back to it because of the journey that it takes you on in like a toxic way. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but I'm just telling y'all how I feel. Maybe other people can relate to that as well. But we have to fight that fight. We are not fighting of flesh and bone. There is a fight in the spiritual realm. And again, get outside of yourself. I also think too that if you are struggling with going back to that old ED, remember the tools that you've learned from your first one. And remember the things that helped you in your first one. I think also you can kind of look at yourself as a mentor to the younger you. Because everything that I've been through, I want to share. So if you're struggling with going back to where you were, look at yourself now as a mentor to that struggle that you experienced once then, and speak truth over yourself. Take it day by day and know that this too shall pass. How to balance food on a plate. One of my favorite questions. This has been something that I've had to learn and train myself in, but I have found for the runner activity that heavy carbs are going to be my best friend. Heavy protein are going to be my best friend. This is very body specific, but I would say that carbs and protein are what I focus on. Especially and fats, carbs, proteins, and fats. You don't need as many fats as you do carbs and proteins. At least I've found for myself when like fueling runs, I don't want to like have a lot of peanut butter or avocado right before I go run, because I just don't feel good, but I feel great on carbs. After those runs, I want to have a protein heavy meal, usually more towards like the middle and end of the day. I find that my body needs those fats, to feel fuller for longer. So the carbs are going to give you energy, make you feel light. And then the protein is going to restore the muscle tears in your body. It's going to give you those muscles, give you that definition. And then the fats are, basically going to make you feel full. They're going to replenish a lot of that fat that you have burned. And especially for women, it's really important to have focus on those fats for reproductive health. We just carry more fat on our body. And yeah. So how to build a plate, it's very person to person specific, but for me personally and what my body needs and what I found what my body needs, I feel great on carb and protein heavy more during the day and then finishing up those fats at night because I tend to be more hungry at night. And so having, you know, an avocado, peanut butter, butter, oils, healthy oils, things like that keep me full to sleep through the night, to get those 8 hours of not eating. And then I wake up in the morning, we start all over again. But I also do find that like in peanut butter or nut butters, there's magnesium. So in a lot of fats of like nuts and things, there's magnesium, which makes you sleepy. So I think that's another reason why I tend to have those fats at night. I just feel a little bit slower. I move a little bit faster on carbs and protein heavy things. And then in regards to like vegetables and fruits, my body responds really well to fruits and not as well to like roughage. I feel really bloated with leafy greens and things like that. So I just get my fiber in other ways. There are lots of different foods and different food groups, but for me, I kind of stay away from the leafy greens. Brussels sprouts make me feel really bad. I think that's another thing. I have a notes app on my phone of paying attention to what makes me feel good and what doesn't make me feel good. So maybe that's another way you can focus on how to build the plate. Like I know the certain foods that make me feel good and the certain foods that don't make me feel good. And the foods that love me back and the foods that don't love me back. And when I am having a situation where I don't really know what to eat or there are a lot of options to eat and I feel overwhelmed, I have something to look at and being like, okay, how do I navigate this? And is it, you know, I really, really want this cookie that has XYZ ingredients that my body doesn't really feel great after. Is it worth it or is it not? And sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. So it just depends. I remember at school, this is off topic, but I remember at school at our food cafeteria, it always hurt my stomach all the time, literally all the time, but it was in my meal plan. So I needed to eat it. So I would eat, you know, my food during the day. And then I would go to the dining hall at night, right before I went to bed, 'cause I knew my stomach was going to hurt, but I could just sleep it off, which is like so college kid things, but anyways, that was just beside the point. How did I tell Ryan about my eating disorder and how did he react? So Ryan is very unfamiliar with this world. He didn't even really know that this world existed until I kind of explained to him how this worked. And he is open and willing to learn and is here for me. And he doesn't always know how to relate and he doesn't always know what to say, but he knows to be there. And I think that's the biggest thing in someone you're looking for in a partner and sharing this with is that ultimately it's going to be revealed. And so I would rather have it be revealed to him from knowing the thoughts inside of myself and how my brain works so that when he sees these things happen or he sees a trigger that happens, he can be more sympathetic, empathetic, and vulnerable with me in walking through that rather than being extremely worried and then coming at me, not knowing how to approach me and not knowing the steps and the things to say, and then having it possibly make me take a step back and be standoffish and feel like I'm being targeted. So yeah, when we first started dating, I kind of walked him through everything. And then when we, you know, got more serious and needed open communication about things, you know, I just kind of walked him through like, hey, I still kind of have these thoughts and this is how I feel the most loved in talking through these things. This is what I need you to say. This is what I need you to not say. And when you're worried, this is how I would appreciate you approaching me. And just really walking through it. And maybe you haven't even thought about that. So maybe that's something you need to think about. And I think this goes just across the board for everyone. I've had to have this conversation with my mom, my dad, my sisters, I only have one sister. I don't know why I said my sisters. I only have one sister. Everyone in my life. But he was so kind and understanding without understanding. He was kind and listened and didn't feel like he had to take charge and let me have that space and let me be able to just share. And he didn't laugh and he didn't make me feel bad. He didn't make me feel like a problem. He honestly empowered me and made me feel so strong. And so I encourage you, if you are in your eating disorder with a significant other or a friend and you need to tell them, navigate and think about inside of yourself what you can tell them in order to help, whether that be, hey, I just need you to sit and listen to me and that's the best way you can help me. Or if that's, hey, I need you to watch me while I eat, you know, because on the other end of it, all we want is to help. And sometimes it's not always the best help with, hey, do this and do this and do this and do this. But that's like our instinct. Like when someone comes to me and they need advice, I want to tell them the advice so I can fix it. It's just what I want to do. That's who we are as women, especially. Like we are fixers. We are wired that way. But if I can come to someone and be like, hey, this is my experience. These are my feelings. And this is what I need from you. It empowers them. It creates trust with you. And there's a vulnerability and an emotional aspect where they're understanding you now. It helps them build that trust because they're like, oh, they're telling me something very serious. I want to keep this connection with this person. How do you deal with people questioning your intention in running/food? That's another thing that even now today, I honestly recognize a lot in social media and with my family, with my mom. My mom really struggles a lot with this because, you know, on social media, I post the big runs. I post the things that are going to get engagement. Like I very obviously put the word easy in front of 15 miles because I know people are going to be like, what? 15 miles easy? What is she talking about? But it's a comment. There's a certain level of, I love social media. This is my passion. And the content I create is authentic. And there's another side of it that's like, also, I need engagement. So there are going to be those words that are big and flashy. It's entertainment. This is a level of entertainment. This is not real life. And I'm trying to make it as real as possible. But there is a level to the editing, a level to the target, a level to the growth of social media to where it is not always real. Not always real, but not always how it is in real life, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Like, yes, I did run those 15 miles and I did run them easy, meaning the easy pace is, you know, whatever my easy pace is, where I have a consistent heart rate. That doesn't mean I just ran 15 miles and I'm like, easy, just as easy as sitting on the couch. No, but I'm not going to explain that. Because it gets people talking. It's a community, you know? And so that's just a little bit of kind of what goes on behind that. And then, you know, I see a comment where it's like, oh my gosh, she's obsessed. Oh my goodness, she, you know, had Miralax in her water and she's a runner. And so she's sick and she's this. And, you know, there's just a lot behind the scenes. Like my doctor prescribed that for me, knowing I'm a runner, but I'm not going to put that in a video. But I don't owe that explanation to anyone. And that's how I deal with it. I don't owe that explanation to anyone. This is my life. And that's something I've really had to learn, especially with my mom. My mom has been with me through all recoveries, all phases of my eating disorder, all ages. I still live at home. I'm saving money before I move out and get married. And it's hard because I want to make my mother proud. And I fall into the trap a lot of wanting to do things for her approval. And she doesn't put that on me at all. My mother is the greatest person in the entire world, but I put that expectation on her. But there have been times where, you know, she wouldn't care me saying this, but my mom has a negative view of running because of my past. She has a negative view of diets because of my past, because she lived that with me. She was the one that pinned me down to try to get me to eat. She was the one that saw me hit myself because I was so angry that I had a little bit extra to eat. She was the one that saw me pinch my skin when I was teeny, teeny, tiny and tell her that I was ugly and this and that. She was the one that sat with me in every cry session. She was the one that I literally slapped on the chest because I was so angry that she wanted me to eat. Like, it was just as traumatic for me as it was for her. And we all have different ways of grieving. And we all also have different like projections and different connections with people. And my biggest encouragement is just to communicate in the best way that you can in setting those boundaries. So for me and my mom, she's someone I'm going to talk through the deep parts of that with. She's someone I'm going to say, hey, this is my life and I'm going to do this. And I want you to come to me with your worries, but this is how I need you to say it. I need you to ask me with an open-ended question. So how do you feel like your running's going? Rather than, I'm really worried that you're running this right now. There's a very different approach and it makes me feel different. And so, mom, I need you to approach me as open-ended, opening the conversation rather than narrowing it in on one thing and having me shut down. And that's something I've had to come to terms with. But I'm not going to have that conversation with user 275 in my comments section, because I don't know that explanation to him. I don't have to prove anything to anybody. The Lord knows my heart. The Lord knows my intentions. And the same goes for food. I don't show everything I eat on purpose because I don't want people commenting on it. But then I get people commenting that I'm not eating enough. But that's a boundary I've set for myself that I'm not going to talk back to that because I don't have anything to prove. And I'm not going to start proving to people that I actually do eat, or else I know that my brain is going to go back to that eat for performance mindset. And this is very personal to me, but it sounds like we may be in similar situations. And it's also dependent upon your age. You know, I was under the roof of my mother, and you know, the Bible commands us to obey your mother and father. And that's what I was doing. And my mom, listen, y'all, my mom is the best mom ever. She was so kind in everything. But I'm just using that as an example because it's, you know, the most recent example that I have. We still have conversations about it now. She still has checkups with me on my runs. I think family has a closer tie to us. They feel like they have more say in our life. But you have to know that your life is your life. And I live my life for the Lord. I don't live the life for my mom. I want to make my parents proud. I love my mother. I love my father. I love everyone in my life that I have in my circle right now. I want to make everyone proud. But I'm not proving them anything. I don't have to prove anything to anybody. I don't owe anybody an explanation for anything. But evaluate those relationships where you do want to explain and you do want to talk through things, because we need those relationships. We need those. We need communication. I want to end today with, I had a couple Bible verses pulled up, but these were a couple that kind of got me through different periods in my life. And I just want to end with these before we go, that maybe they could be an encouragement for you. So this is Matthew. This is chapter 6, and I'm starting at verse 25. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet the heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Can any one of you worry by adding a single hour to your life? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which are here today and tomorrow are thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, you of little faith? So do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink? What shall we wear? For the pagans run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. That was something that really helped me with my food thoughts, with my eating thoughts. And then this really helped me with my workout thoughts. This is verse 8 in chapter 4 of 1 Timothy. For physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. I just love it. I just love that one. That was my verse for my second marathon that I ran. And then this is, what is this? Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. And let us run with the endurance the race God has set before us. We do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion, who initiates and perfects our faith. Because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame. Now he's seated in the place of honor beside God's throne. Think of all the hostility he endured from sinful people. Then you won't become weary and give up. I really just love it. It's a great example for racing. It's a great comparison, like parallel. You know, we're fighting the good fight and we are running the ultimate race. And it's very easy to zone in on these problems and feel like we're alone. And my encouragement is to know that there is light at the end of the tunnel. And I also want you to know that I am here. There are people in your community that love you. And my encouragement is that you tell someone that you trust, that you want to be like. And a tool you can use is to think about the people you do want to be like and think about why you like them, because there is not one person in my life that I like them because they are a certain size. There's not one person in my life that I look at them and I like them and I'm so grateful for them because they eat less than everybody else. There is not someone in my life that I am friends with because they have the best body out of everybody else. The Lord is not going to greet you at the gates of heaven and give you a round of applause because you ran an extra 5 miles today. He's not going to tell you, good job, faithful servant, for starving yourself for 3 days straight. He's not going to do that. He's not. Reevaluate where your priorities are. Reevaluate what you're idolizing, who you're idolizing, and differentiate your voice from evil. You got this. Maybe I'll do a part two. Let me know if you want me to do a part two. And we're trying to get more engagement on this podcast. So in any way that you can engage would be greatly appreciated, especially because this is a very vulnerable podcast for me. But I'll be praying for you all. I love you all so much. So much. Literally so much. You don't understand. I wish I could just like hug every single person that has come in contact with our content. I just love you guys so much. You have no idea. Okay, I'm gonna stop. I love you all. Jesus loves you, and that's life.